because a creative teacher departs from tradition. And some of us find that difficult to accept. When we depart from tradition, if you are used to studying the Bible verse by verse, then it's kind of upsetting if the teacher says, well, today we're going to study thought by thought. Where does the thought begin and where does the thought end? That's part of the creativity of teaching, is to help them to understand and help them to draw conclusions, help them to divide material so that we can get it in bits that we can understand. I think in our traditional teaching, where we teach verse by verse, it's like eating oatmeal with a teaspoon. You get a little bit at a time, and it's pretty dull. So if you're going to, I don't mean to depart from tradition just for the sake of departing from tradition. That isn't the point. The point is that the worst way to teach is the way it's always been taught. If you can remember that, the worst way to teach is the way it's always been taught. Because you've heard it before, you've gone through it before, and therefore we're just being rehashing it again. So creative teaching departs from tradition. I don't know how many of you have ever tried a technique like I used one time of singing a song to start your lesson. I was amused by using that in a way. I did it deliberately because I wanted to get people's attention and I wanted to set a mood. It wasn't to show off my wonderful voice. You know how wonderful my voice is. But to set a mood and to get attention, there's no better way that I found. Maybe you have a different way. But I know the first time I used that technique in bringing a lesson, that many people sat and they just looked like this. I can't believe he's doing it. He's gone crazy. He's lost his mind. We don't do this in the Church of Christ. And then some of them sang along because they felt sorry for me, thought I needed help. That's good. That's good. But it shows how upset they were by a new technique, just a different technique. And I don't think I was unscriptural in using the technique. I believe that any technique that gets your attention, that is honorable, and sets a mood, is fair game. Now, some people said, well, Marvin's just showing off again, just like he always does. Well, that isn't the point. I really don't care if they say that, if it isn't true. If it's true, then I'm upset about it. But if it isn't true, I don't care what they say about it. This is one thing you have to learn if you're going to be a creative teacher. You've got to learn to stick your neck out, and maybe you won't even get your head back. But you at least tried something that was different and new because you were trying to solve a problem that you saw. It also departs from common thinking. If you're going to be creative, you can't be a common teacher. If you go to class saying, well, I'm just an average teacher, you are. No question about it. You are what you are. I'm sure you've all heard the story of the man who went to the psychiatrist and said, Doctor, I just feel so inadequate. I just feel like I'm so inferior. Well, he says, tell me about it. And he related several things. And he says, well, I got this to tell you, Joe. You are inferior. If I think that I'm not a good teacher, if I think that I'm not a creative teacher, then I'm not, probably. Because as a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. We tend to act like we think. And you've got to be a bit wild to be a creative teacher. You can't take the sure route. You can't say, well, now we're going to study our ABCs today. Everybody say A, everybody say B, everybody say C. And you repeat it. You can't do that. You've got to be daring. And you've got to be subject to criticism, but you don't have to yield to criticism. And this is one point I want to make in our workshop today. Don't be so concerned about what other teachers do or what other people say. If you have a goal in mind and you need to do this to accomplish your goal, hang what the other person says. hang what the other teacher does. She's probably an ordinary teacher anyway. Don't be afraid to stick your neck out. It departs from the ordinary. This is why I use the technique that I was telling you about in singing a song before a lesson, to set a mood. I'd never seen this work, but I read a little book that said we ought to make our music reinforce our worship. If your music doesn't reinforce the total worship, then your music director or whoever is leading the songs just isn't with it. How many of you have music directors that ask the person, well, what's your lesson going to be so I can find a song that'll fit the lesson? Does that happen in your congregation? And many times the person bringing the lesson said, oh, it really doesn't matter, just any old song will do. They both need educating if that's true, don't they? To be creative, we must depart from tradition, we must depart from common thinking, we must depart from the ordinary. This is creativity when you apply, make a new application, or you approach it from a different angle, or anything that's different to maintain the interest. Of course, it has to be in agreement with the subject matter. You wouldn't teach Bible by having a drink of beer, would you? It has to be in agreement with the subject matter. It has to be in harmony with the subject matter. But we can depart from tradition in our forms of expression. Let me show you how the Bible does that. Jesus' method of teaching was in what? Parables. He told a little earthly story, then he made a heavenly application, didn't he? That was totally unheard of in Judaism. You wouldn't have dared told an earthly story to demonstrate a heavenly principle. You should know what the heavenly words were, and then you didn't worry about the earthly words. You didn't worry about making the application. Jesus always made the application, didn't he? But he used a parable to add intrigue to what he was saying. Can you do the same thing in a class? Suppose I told you a story about a man that no one liked, everybody despised, they spit on him, they said bad things about him, except Jesus didn't do that. Who is it? Who is that man? Huh? No? Zacchaeus. Zacchaeus. You see, the difference between me using that approach and me using the approach, well, there was a man who ran and climbed up in a tree. How many would you got that? How many of you would have gotten the story right off if I had said, I'll tell you today a story about a man who climbed a tree to see Jesus? You'd all got it, wouldn't you? But when you add the little intrigue, just a different approach, a different form of expression, the dramatization was a different form of expression. Who told the riddle to get people to understand what he was trying to say? Huh? Did he get it so that they would understand or they wouldn't understand? They wouldn't understand. That's why he did it. Do you ever use that approach? Make something so difficult that they can't understand it just to pique their interest? And get them involved in what you want to teach a little bit later. I think that's the way Supply Samson did it. I've got a riddle for you. We can pretend. How many of you like to play pretend? Suppose you were Queen Esther, Mary Jo. Suppose you were Queen Esther, and your neck is on the line if you go into the king and he doesn't hold the scepter out to you. And your people are on the line if you do. That'd be fun to pretend, wouldn't it? It'd be fun to pretend. But what do I have to do to pretend? If it does you any good, I have to tell you what I'm thinking while I'm pretending, don't I? And most of us are reluctant to do that. You see, teachers are a protective lot. That's why we have this podium up here, so I could be behind it so you wouldn't hit me with tomatoes. I can duck down right quick. Or any other way to separate me from my students. The best teacher sits right down in the middle of the students in a ring with the students in a half circle around her. That's the way the early Jewish teachers taught. That's the way Jesus taught. He didn't stand up to a pulpit and teach people who were sitting down. He sat down and taught them while they were sitting down. So many, many things we can use when we want to be creative. But it takes work, doesn't it? You take little Junior, he's always full of glee. You've heard the little story. Little Willie, full of glee, nailed his sister to the tree. Mother said he had an ardor because she was her little daughter. We've got little Willies in our class, haven't we? Why are they acting up? They want attention. Willie is probably very good at pretending. He's probably got an imagination that'd curl your hair. But find out what he's interested in and have him pretend for the class. Let them benefit from his superior intelligence and his zip, you might say. If we could just can it, we'd sell it for $1 a pound, wouldn't we? I think that to be creative, we have to pass the test, though, of those who are competent to judge whether or not we were effective. And who is better to judge than we ourselves, first of all? Do you feel good after the class is over? If you don't, then you haven't done a very good job. Does the student feel better? Did he come together for better or for worse? Is he the worse for having come, or is he the better for having come? And I ought to be able to answer that in the positive. If whatever form I use, whether it's creative or not, I believe in the creative process, a teacher is more of a mediator than she is a body of knowledge or a walking encyclopedia or anything like that. She's a mediator between the learner and his experiences. Why was I glad that we had a bright room to come to today? Because this is conducive to good learning. That bulletin board over there is conducive to good learning, isn't it? We are trying to set up an experience for each one of you so that you can learn, if it's possible to learn, if there's anything to be learned. I mediate. I don't belch it out. I don't regurgitate. I am not the source of what you're going to learn. I am a helper to help you learn what is to be learned, not the source. I think too long in the church we have had the idea that the teacher had to know everything. Well, the teacher can't know everything. But she can bring the student to the point that he experiences what she knows or what he knows. What he has experienced, he can share those with him, but he can't make him learn. You can't make me learn. You can expose me to learning, but you can't make me learn. So a teacher in a creative situation is merely bringing the student to an experience with learning, to an experience that he can have. She is participating. She's not dominating. She's guiding. She's encouraging. She's pushing him toward this goal that she has. But don't forget that he has a goal of his own and he's going toward that. She has to guide him toward accomplishing both of those or he's going to go home disappointed. He only got half of what he should have gotten. She does this by helping him gain access to facts. Now here's where we come into Bible teaching, I think. It's easy for us sometimes to quote the verse of Scripture that the person asked about and give that as the answer to the question. What would be better in your opinion? Have them read it. First, have them find it. Why? Do they need exercise in finding it? Yes. They need exercise in finding it. We all need exercise in finding it. Then you read it. What's the advantage in him reading it? Right. When he goes home, it's going to say the same thing. He'll retain it longer if he reads it because he had a part in it. There's another thing that I think in creative teaching We set a mood for learning. We've had a pretty relaxed mood here this morning, I feel, if we're really going to learn something. I wouldn't want my classroom to be this relaxed. I don't want anybody to be uptight. But on the other hand, if I'd come in here in my overalls and my old farmer shirt and my hip boots, you would say I was relaxed, I was ready to go, wasn't I? I try to appear as a professional teacher. I hope that I do. But you see, I can set the mood just by what I wear, by how I smell, can I? I know a teacher that wore the same dress for 13 days. How do I know it? Because it was experienced. What were the kids learning that day? Well, she's got the same old dress on today. I wonder how long she's going to wear it. And I'll bet you a dime she wears that all next week, too. Was there interest in what happened? Yes, there was interest, but not what she intended, I'm sure. We enjoy moods of feeling. We can set the mood by the stance we take when we start the process of learning. Do you know I can tell by walking into a teacher's classroom what we're going to have that day? Whether it's going to be fun or serious, or you better sit up and look right or you'll get your ears boxed type of thing. We had this demonstrated just a while back in our congregation. I think all of you know Mike Soliday. He's the one that has the difficulty hearing. And he came in and I thought to my soul that he must have gone off his rocker. He looked like a bum, a hick, something you'd find along the road. I thought he probably had an accident on his way to church. Sat there with his hat on and all this and old garb. He was all roughed up. He didn't even look clean. I didn't think anybody would carry it that far. But then when he got up to bring his lesson, he brought a good lesson on being prejudiced about people just by their outward appearance. I judged him. I'd already judged him and sent him to the other place. He wouldn't be on my list of speakers again because he might pull this again. Well, then when he got up and explained why, I'm saying that you can set the mood too. Like Walter said, if you're not enthusiastic about what we're going to learn, oh, we're going to study the story of Moses again today. We've studied 100 times, I reckon. You've got to be enthusiastic about what you're going to teach. Nels? Yes, I think everybody recognized that he was a teacher, yes.
Does he dress differently than everybody else?
No, I don't think he dressed differently. I think he dressed appropriately, let's put it that way. Now, what you think is appropriate for a teacher and what I think might be two different things. You don't think it's important. Is that what you're saying? Why did people recognize him as a teacher then? He didn't wear a label saying, I are a teacher. But what did he do? By his mannerisms, by the way he conducted himself, and by the way he dressed, I believe that he left the impression that he was there to teach them something. Okay, go ahead, Bruce. Works both ways. If he doesn't act like a policeman, he's still not a policeman. Right. Gregory, do you have a thought?
Being in the overalls and so forth, being relaxed. I'm not relaxed.
You're not relaxed. I'm not either.
It's a little bit effective of how we perceive other
right.
people.
Right.
Address out of respect for others.
Yeah. To someone who is not in an occupation, they have a perception of that occupation. Whereas someone else will see a difference.
This is why I believe that Gregory and I have a basic difference on this matter. Margaret? Yeah, that's true. I agree with that. Makes the impression, though, whether what kind of person you are. Oh, I do too. I agree.
You know, you take, there's some people that can't afford a good suit of clothes like you can. See?
Well, these are $3 DAV special.
But maybe they can give up, get up and give just an exhortation.
That's true. I'm not trying to say that I'm going to set a standard of dress for the teacher.
But I think there's one thing.
Right.
I think you're dressing for you.
Right. And for impression.
People will receive you as you. Mm-hmm. And you're not dressing for a profession necessarily. But you are dressing for your personality and you so that people will recognize you for who you are.
I want to point out one thing in regard to this. You know, in the Soviet Union, when the teacher comes into the classroom, all the students stand up and say, "Good morning, teacher." You say, "Well, that's under communism. We don't have to stand up and say, 'Good morning, teacher.'" But I think we've lost something. You know, the teacher used to be in this country, the teacher was the most important person or the most learned person in the community. He knew his Bible and he knew how to teach it. We've lost that, haven't we? We lost the garb, we lost the title, we lost the respect somewhere along the line. And somehow or other, if I walk into a hospital, and this is where I disagree with Gregory, if I walk into a hospital and see a man in a white coat, I assume that he's the doctor, if he's acting like a doctor. There are other people who wear white coats, too, that aren't doctors, they're orderlies. But if he acts like the doctor and he's dressed like the doctor, it must be the doctor.
That's something that we give up, not that we lose.
Right, we give it up. But I'm saying, it's our own fault we give it up.
I just want to make one point myself on this. Why do we go to a wedding or a funeral and dress and wear a fancy coat at a wedding that you wouldn't wear in a suit? Why do they do that? It's respect.
Yeah, it's out of respect for the person.
That person asking, so who should have the best respect?
Yeah, that's my point. Okay, Margaret, this is the last comment we're going to have on this one. Prerogative teacher. That's a sign, isn't it? Okay. Now I want to give you the process of being creative. There are about three steps to it. Number one is openness. I cannot be creative and be a closed person. I have to be open to be bombarded from all sides, and I have to be able to bombard from all sides. In order to be a creative teacher, I have to be open. If I have a closed mind, if I've already made up my mind, this is the way it is and it can't be any other way, then I can never be a creative teacher. I have to open up. And when I open up, I stand to be hurt, don't I? Isn't that why we open up? Why does the principal always stand like this? Did you ever think about it? They call him the man with the golden arms. Why? Because he's protecting himself. He's not going to let anybody get close enough to him, any closer than his arms will reach. And sometimes